You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. Nick Westergaard here. Before we get to this week's episode of the On Brand Podcast, I wanted to take a moment and tell you about a new opportunity for connecting with me. I have just started a Facebook page, facebook.com/Westergaard. That's W-E-S-T-E-R-G-A-A-R-D. This is a new way of connecting with me about what I do as a writer, as a speaker, new projects that I'm working on, helpful links, podcast episodes, and more. If you want the latest and the greatest from me, connect with me, give me a like on Facebook. You can search for Nick Westergaard on Facebook, or you can simply go to facebook.com/Westergaard. Thanks.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Ashley Zechman. Ashley is the director of agency marketing for Top Rank Marketing, a fully integrated digital marketing agency. In addition to finding innovative ways to showcase the exceptional work of her team, she is also responsible for creating digital marketing programs that drive customer acquisition and growth for the agency. Her background includes expertise in content strategy, branding, influencer marketing, and social media. Ashley, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks for having me, Nick. It's great to be here.
Now, this is I think we were joking beforehand, a hard-to-schedule podcast, which is somewhat odd because there was a while there where we were seeing one another about every month back in September for the Social Brand Forum here in Iowa and in October at Marketing Profs B2B Forum as well. But here we are after many a schedule conflict. We have made this happen.
Finally. I'm just so stoked. It took a while. Maybe you should change the name to the Hard to Schedule Podcast.
The Hard to Schedule Podcast. You know, we learn things about branding, even branding of this very podcast. So the Hard to Schedule Podcast with all sorts of new and exciting guests that we'll bring to you at some point. We just don't know exactly when.
Exactly.
So, Ashley, you are responsible for all sorts of the amazing marketing that comes from Top Rank Marketing. We have had your head of Top Rank, Lee Oden, on this very podcast as well. And what I think makes Top Rank so amazing, and beyond saying that in a way that sounds like I am being overly congratulatory to the guest. I think what those that have an agency background that are listening to this show can easily recognize is that often that old adage comes to life of the cobbler's son has no shoes. That it's often very hard when you are creating marketing for clients to go forth and do that on behalf of your own firm as well. Can you talk a bit about that challenge? Because I don't think that where I was going is, I don't think that's the case with Top Rank. I think that the work that you put out there, which touches on many of the different things that we'll discuss here, from content strategy to your work in influencer marketing, but I think Top Rank is a standout when it comes to your own agency brand as well.
Well, thank you for all of the compliments, Nick. It's, you know, kind of that cobbler maker's or, you know, cobbler's children's shoes is a joke that we make all of the time internally. And we're fortunate that it doesn't impact as many areas as it might with other agencies, but, you know, our website being a thing that we've wanted to update for years and, you know, really want to work on. I mean, that's one of the few things that I think hasn't maybe gotten as much attention that it deserves. On the flip side, what's been really, really great is being able to test things in our own marketing that trickle down into our client marketing. So I have been given this enormous opportunity and responsibility to try new things, to innovate, to you know, begin working with influencers back in 2011 on some projects with CMI. And that has really worked its way into the services that we deliver for our clients. So it's a really cool place to be. It's accepted that you will try and maybe fail, but fail fast and learn from it. And so that's something I've really, really been able to, and you know, that I've really enjoyed being able to do here, is seeing how it goes from an idea we have for our own marketing to execution to eventually how that lands in client programs.
Well, and that's such a neat way to look at it too. I think that'll also be a big light bulb for folks, because what you said about testing out the stuff that you learn on behalf of the agency marketing, which I think really helps kind of reboot or rework that stereotype that we talk about with the cobbler's son, because we do that, you know, usually the reasoning for that logic is prioritization, is our clients pay the bills. We have to make sure that their branding and marketing is taken care of. So we'll get to our own work when we can. But your whole point there about everything that you can test out, especially in this era where I think testing it out is so very important.
Yeah, I mean, it actually works both ways, too. So I'm, you know, kind of spanning across the organization, both in our internal marketing and then, you know, marketing for some of our clients as well. And I've learned a lot from our actual clients, from how our client teams are running things that I can use in our marketing and vice versa. But it's, I don't know, I look at it as like a really awesome opportunity that not a lot of people have, or at least they're not looking at it the same way we are.
That's really, again, I think it's one of those things that is kind of slow to change, but I think with points like that, definitely can. Are there success stories that you think of about that that are kind of unique to your vantage point of kind of serving both agency marketing and client marketing as well?
Specific success points. I'm used to working, not completely solo, but, you know, I've had some dedicated staff team members on the internal agency side. I've also, you know, stole to get time from the rest of my team, to contribute to things. So it's not like we have a big internal agency department. And so what I've really found is that I have become hyper-organized, which is not innate to my ability. And I try to find efficiencies where I can. I try and figure out, do we need five people in this room talking about this? Can we shave 2 weeks off this timeline for a client program? Because I've done this before on my own and I know what it takes to get it done. So I feel like that's been a good thing that I've learned to carry over to our account team, is to, you know, kind of really look at, if you had to do this on your own, what would you do? What steps do you actually need to make this successful? So that's been something that I've really enjoyed being able to help the team with. But then there's other things regarding process that they do that I was like, oh, maybe that's something I should be doing more of. Maybe I would have a little bit more data if I made this small tweak, or here's how you can look at the data differently. So I don't know if that exactly answered your question, but those are a couple of things that I've really noticed in sort of creating change in both our marketing and our client marketing.
So, you know, when I think of what TopRank's known for and what folks like you and Lee talk about a great deal, I do think it's this topic of influencer marketing. And I think that that's categorically one of those things that we, you know, I'd like to say that we nod along with and say, yep, that's important. But why is influencer marketing so important for brands today?
That's a fantastic question that I wish I had a canned answer for.
Well, let me tell you, bam.
Here it is. So We really look at influencer marketing, and again, there, let's say there's 500 different definitions for what it actually means. But for us, it's definitely about co-creating content with influencers, since content is a cornerstone of our agency. Everything we do here is connected to content, and working with influencers, we're able to find people that our audiences or our clients' audiences already believe and trust in, right? These are already well-recognized people that they like to hear from. And we know all of the statistics around how people are more likely to buy from someone they know and trust than from a brand. So that's one benefit, is really, you know, being able to build some credibility and authority and trust with people. Another thing is obviously reach. So a lot of our clients may have they may be a somewhat well-known brand, but they may have a smaller reach. And we want to figure out how many more people can we get this message out to. And, you know, the third one is really, how can we create some awesome, awesome content with industry experts, especially in some very niche industries where we don't have the expertise. So the most logical place is to go to influencers who already have that expertise.
Well, and that's, you know, when you talk about those 3 points and those dots you can connect, I mean, I think it's really a way of growing your impact, growing your connection, and kind of expanding that expertise moving forward. And I also think that reinforces or somehow, again, this is where we're eluding canned answers, it reinforces the overall brand that you're trying to build, because I have to think that of all of the stuff that you can potentially do with influencer marketing, that it has to overlay pretty clearly with your overall brand strategy as well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, different influencer programs have different objectives. It could be, you know, building brand awareness. It could be actually generating revenue or generating leads. And one of the best stories I can think of is a large IT brand that we worked with earlier this year that was kind of third in the marketplace in terms of some of the clients they worked with, their capabilities, but no one knew who the heck they were. They may as well have been 20th on that list because they were working with, you know, against some very heavy hitters. And we ran an influencer program for them. It was the first one they'd done. We were very careful about, you know, nurturing the influencer relationships and putting together this really awesome piece of content, or I guess a few different pieces of content that the influencers could be proud to contribute to. And then making this sort of this hub page where people could go and download the ebook, they could read interviews, they could get a lot of insights all in one place, and it performed amazing for them, right? So as, you know, again, kind of a market leader that was less well known behind some really big brands, we were really able to elevate that brand perception by working with these people that are very well respected, very well known, and even just bringing it to people's attention that they exist.
So when you talk about the content, and you even mentioned in that last example specifically, the ebook, is that content that is co-created? Is the form of that content changing at all in, you know, as we look at trends with video and other formats over the past year?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been doing co-created ebooks with influencers since, I think that first one Lee and I did was in 2011 for Content Marketing World. Mm-hmm. And we've been, you know, doing those. We did those for ourselves for a few years. And then again, that was something that trickled down into our client programs. But I think, again, as a marketer, if sometimes I think, you know, if I have to download one more ebook and give my information for it, I'm going to freak out, right? So it's a matter of, I think that those forms of content are still important. They still exist. It's just a matter of, is the content within worth giving up your information for, or should they be used as more of awareness campaigns to draw people in? And I know this year, especially, we've done a lot more with video. So video interviews with influencers. I actually had the first one from a series that I recorded at Marketing Profs B2B Forum go live last week. We'll have another one this week where we are talking through different questions with these influencers. We've also done that for a few of our clients. And interactive is a place that we've really been playing a lot lately. I know we have probably 3 or 4 projects we're working on right now that are interactive, and truly interactive, in that there's an input and a response and an output, not just something that loads cool on the page, which is also awesome, but a true interactive experience. So we've been really kind of focusing on those a bit more while still knowing that things like ebooks and blog content have their place.
Well, that's cool. So talk more about the interactive, because that's a piece that I know I personally, I mean, I think of it as a static ebook or a static video. But what does something like that? Because that sounds like it might pass that test that you were talking about that I know I think about, too, of putting in my info for this ebook that I might maybe need.
Well, in true to form, this was something we tested for ourselves before we started rolling it out into our client programs. So we did a co-marketing project with both Syros and with SnapApp, which are interactive platforms. And with Syros, what we did was a remake of our Influence 2.0 report that we co-created earlier this year as well, and found that we were able to kind of let people skip around to the pieces that were most important to them. And the analytics were really good on it. We could see what stood out most to people, which helped inform additional content we could create to support that. And then with SnapApp, we created a quiz of sorts that was, you know, how to really create a stellar content experience. And, you know, we had a list of questions, seemingly simple, that people could answer. And then we didn't have the gated piece till right towards the end. And we found our conversion rate was like 30%, which was pretty crazy because people didn't miss out on any information by not putting that in. So they got the whole piece of content. Then we asked them, you know, do you want to learn more about this? Are you interested in working with us? And with that type of hard sell question at the end, we still got amazing conversions, which I was really excited about. And for our client programs, you know, we've tested a few different things. We're working on a kind of quiz-based one for a client right now, as well as another influencer-driven interactive ebook. But one of the things that I'm really excited about is for one of our clients, we put together this program for them this year that started with a report. So we actually executed an industry report for them on the topic of content marketing, and were able to figure out exactly what their core audience was looking for. And that really drove our asset creation through the year. And at the end, or I guess at the very beginning of next year, we're going to roll all of that content with, of course, some new content into this large interactive asset that is going to give everyone kind of soup to nuts what they need to know about content marketing, strategy, planning, execution. So there's definitely different ways that you can bundle and repurpose and rework with interactive content, which is what I'm really excited about.
That's cool. And it does, despite being something new and different, doesn't sound maybe as intimidating as it might early on. In talking about what you're excited about moving forward as we record this, we're, and as this airs, it will be the first part of December, and many are in that kind of holiday mode, but prepping for a new year ahead. What challenges in your travels, in your work, do you hear among marketers and brand builders out there?
I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is something that Anne Hanley shared when I was interviewing her about a similar topic, which is, you know, one thing we learned this year is that marketers need to quit being afraid and really just go for it, because if we don't, other people will, right? And no amount of resources or budget, you know, can really determine whether you have a good idea and have the ability to test it or not. So I think just, you know, really focusing on being super optimistic going into the new year, knowing that you'll have to do certain things to sort of, you know, keep the lights on, but that we shouldn't be creating marketing or content for content's sake only, that we really have to be looking at kind of what's that impact, what are we doing that's different, how does our brand stand out and connect with our customers, are we creating things for actual people or just the stuff that we want to create because we find it interesting and imperative that everyone know it. So I think that's kind of looking into 2018. It's just kind of letting our fears not push us around and really just going for it full force.
Well, and that's, I think that's really relevant to this kind of inflection point that we're at here where there is so much of that. You know, I think we talked about it on in the panel, the Me Too content that, you know, so many of us, as we built up these systems, we blog this much, we podcast this much, we make this many videos, we do these ebooks. And it's easy to kind of get into that kind of old mindset of we have these programs that we don't refresh as much as we should. So I think that, but I also think about that role that fear plays too, because a lot of these things are new and different, whether that's something interactive, whether that's something with live video. And it's scary stuff. And even the other stuff that we've been doing maybe for a year or two still feels safer.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think we're just at a point where we really, I think, you know, for our client programs and for our own marketing, what we've really tried to focus on is one, eliminating waste. So again, are we creating five blog posts a week when we find that only blog posts on these certain days on these certain topics actually really resonate with our audience, right? How many hours are we putting into creating things that no one's reading, sharing, or cares about? And then, you know, how can we be more agile as well? So if we have, you know, especially if you live in the agency world, you know that typically programs are structured a very specific way. Things are sold. You have a timeline of the things that you need to deliver. But if you're finding that things aren't working, how quickly are you talking to your either external clients or internal clients and saying, hey, this isn't working. We want to test this. This is what we expect to be the outcome. Can we go for it? Right. And we've done a lot of that with our clients, especially over the past year, and have seen amazing results with it. So just kind of, you know, not being confined by agreements or the way that we've always done it, and kind of looking for a new, better way to execute on marketing.
That's, you know, because I think that to your earlier point of we know that X will yield Y. And even as we see Y diminish, we kind of cling to continuing to do X. And the opportunity cost in that is what you might be able to get by kind of getting past some of that fear that I think it's easy to have these days. So where are some of your, I think we talked about this on the panel also, but I think it's a worthwhile question to revisit. Where are some of the places where you look to find new ideas of what's new, of what's next, to try out either for clients or for the Top Rank brand?
I think, to be honest, one of my greatest sources of inspiration are often in different industries. So again, I'm fortunate I get to market marketing to marketers, which is awesome. But on some of our client programs, you know, how meta is that? On some of our client programs, you know, we're working in some very interesting industries where there seems to be kind of some confines around, you know, you need to be very authoritative, you don't use humor, you don't do this. And I've found that just kind of going outside and seeing what people in other industries are doing. There was a video series that a friend of mine and I, who works here as well, were talking about the other week about having these two people that come from different origins or have completely opposing views on something sit down in a room and videotape, you know, kind of talking about it, going back and forth. And I think it was an ad, actually. I think it may have been a Super Bowl ad last year. But then what we started talking about is, well, what if you get a salesperson and a marketing person sitting down having the same kind of conversation, but instead of going against each other, they tried to figure out how to make it work together, right? Because there's always that conflict of sales and marketing and that never working. So I think kind of using ideas that we find in the wild are super important. I also participate in a few groups on Facebook and other platforms. The Social Media Masterminds group, which I believe you may be part of as well, Nick,
yes.
And then Women in Content Marketing, run by Susan from BuzzSumo. These are just great places to start conversations. So you don't have someone really telling you this is exactly how it should be. It's, well, what do you guys think about this topic, right? And then you have 15, 20, 30, 40 people sharing insights into things that, you know, it's a different perspective than you might otherwise get. And then Anne is someone, obviously, that I love and follow everywhere she goes, not in a weird way. I mean, everything she does is amazing, right? It's hard not to, you know, be a super fangirl of hers, because it's just the way that she looks at things and the places that she finds humor and inspiration kind of want to make you look outside of your norm as well.
Well, I think I love the idea of looking for those ideas outside of industry, because I think you also mentioned a critical step that a lot of people kind of look at that approach and, you know, some would say, oh, it's derivative to do what someone else is doing. And I think that that's closed-minded in a different way. But what I think most miss is a key step that you mentioned, that you found what the bigger idea was beyond just, oh, hey, it's a cute idea if we have two people talking. You instead found the framework of what that was really doing, really the strategy behind the idea, and found a way to bend that back into what you were working on that project at that time as well.
Yeah, and you know, things evolve and things change. So what may have been our original idea, obviously, to have it be influenced by other things that are happening, I think is a good thing, right? So if you have kind of your guiding force, maybe it's your creative brief or whatever leading your strategy, obviously leading your project, using that, you know, going back to it from time to time to make sure you're still on track with the objectives. But if you can find a more creative, inspiring, engaging way to create, to get that same outcome, or a better one, why not do it? Totally. I guess would be my question.
And that is a striking question. As we talk about seeing ideas, seeing inspiration, it reminds me, as the clock is telling me the time of our podcast, it is that for asking for the brand that has made you smile recently.
I have two that I really, really love, but I'm going to have to go with my absolute favorite, which is BarkBox.
Yes.
I have followed them, gosh, since they have been in existence, I swear. And they have, you know, the perfect combination of humor and tugging at the heartstrings. So, you know, and I would venture to say that probably about 30 to 40% of everything I share on Facebook is from BarkBox, because I love everything that they put out there. And it has made me a loyal person that, yes, does order from them as well. But it's, you know, stuff that I'm trying to share out with my network as well. And I just, you know, some of the things make me cringe because they're really sad. Other things make me fall off my chair laughing. And I think to be able to do both of those things really, really, really well, and they know who their audience is, and they do a great job of marketing. And their brand is very, I guess, human isn't the right word since it's four dogs, but you know what I mean. They've dogonized their brand.
I was going to say, I think there is a level of humanity, for lack of a better word, and authenticity there that makes them great. And that is an awesome example of a brand that's made you smile, and a reminder of a previous episode of this podcast when we talked with Stacy Grissom, head of content over at BarkBox. So I will link up to that in our show notes. Speaking of links, Ashley, where could folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
That's a very good question. So I would say the best place, if you want to know about me personally, is to connect with me on LinkedIn. And I'm always looking for new people to chat with, connect with. And in terms of the marketing that I do for us, if you go to toprankblog.com, that's our agency blog. I have written, I think, close to 300 articles there. So if you want to know if I actually know what I'm talking about or not, maybe that will help. And then you can also visit toprankmarketing.com, which is our agency site, which talks a little bit more about what we do, why we do it, who we do it for.
Great. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Ashley, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thanks, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Don Stanley gave us a shout out on Twitter for our episode featuring Andy Cunningham about finding aha positioning for your brand. Thanks for listening, Don. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.